Hope you're doing well today. Okay. Oh, good. Okay, there was. You're out there. Let the kids get down a little further. So, who's been watching the news about this storm that's coming? Florence. That one's going to be nasty. We've taken a couple of weekend trips, or like, you know, 3 or 4 day trips to Charleston. I think we've been twice now, Charleston, South Carolina. Old city, if you've ever been there. It's kind of like Savannah. It reminds me of Savannah. But both times that we've gone, they were like 3 years apart. It came a really hard rain in that city, and it flooded. I mean, the downtown flooded for 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, restaurants were sweeping water out of their doors and so forth. And I don't know how common it is, but there's just nowhere for the water to go. The sewers were all had swirls around them, but it just couldn't evacuate fast enough. Matter of fact, the first time it happened to us, we were in the car, and you know, the girls were really little, and it was the first time I'd ever been afraid that our car was going to be taken. You know, because I could see the water start to come up, and it was starting to get around the door, and I'm looking for, you know, how can I get out of this situation without freaking everybody out? You know, the girls were old enough to know when Daddy was worried. So we got out of the situation okay, and the next thing you know, there's water everywhere. But this storm is talking about up to 30 inches of rain and 150-mile-an-hour winds, and people are saying they're not going to evacuate. It boggles my mind, but there's going to be a lot of people that need our prayers and a lot of people that, unfortunately, for whatever stubborn reason, are going to get themselves a mess, probably for weeks out there. So, you know, God knows all about that, but, you know, the church ought to be praying and the church ought to be keeping them in our prayers. So, tonight, I'm going to start the lesson with a quote from a preacher that preached back in the 1800s. You guys ever heard of Charles Haddon Spurgeon? He's pretty famous, and it amazes me how many people know about him. And that's a lot of years ago. The 1800s, he lived from like 1830-something to 1892. You can do the math. He died when he was 58 years old. And I was curious because, you know, he did get so much notoriety and he did have such an influence on the world. I was just curious about a little bit about him. So I Googled him today and I found that there are preachers on the Internet that actually read his sermons so you can listen to his sermons. They actually, now, he couldn't be recorded back then because Thomas Edison was just kind of starting to figure all out how to record people, and it certainly, even though it had been invented, it wasn't open to the public. So they said his sermons, they would actually, there would be people there transcribing them as he preached them, and they would transcribe them into multiple languages, and immediately it would go out to the world in those different languages to teach people. And I think that's amazing that God would use a man like that in that day and time. So I kind of got caught up in it today and letting my phone play over the car. And I was listening to one of his sermons read by another preacher. I wish I could have heard it under his voice because I got a feeling that he probably had quite a delivery. But see if I can get the word right, the orator skills, the flowery language, the majesty with which he delivered a sermon was it was almost like poetry. And it was all the way through. And I was just really impressed by that. And I guess the time, I guess there was nothing to distract your time back then. At least no technology. There's probably a lot of chickens needed plucked. And I don't know what else would people do back then. I don't know. Farmed, I don't know. But he was a preacher in England. And ended up being a Bible college named after him. And he went on to do some pretty amazing things. He was actually pretty controversial too. He actually broke away from the church based on doctrine, so he had quite a stance. But I read this quote that I'm going to read to you guys tonight. It was probably 15, 20 years ago. And I don't remember things like this. I don't remember much. But for some reason, this quote has stuck in my brain all these years. And for some reason, This week, when I was thinking about what I might teach tonight, this quote was prominent in my mind. So, Charles Spurgeon said, "Apathy is the glove into which the devil slips his hand." Apathy is the glove into which the devil slips his hand. So, what is apathy? We don't use that word a whole lot. Apathy. So apathy is kind of whatever attitude, whatever goes. Kind of like a no passion, apathetic, kind of giving up and just go with the flow, wherever the flow takes you. I don't really care, I don't care enough to put forth, any effort. I'm not going to fight. So if you think about it, when your hand goes into a glove, the glove does exactly what the hand commands. If you make a fist, the glove makes a fist. If you give the number one, the glove gives the number one. Anywhere the hand goes is where the glove goes. So, thinking about the way Spurgeon talked about this, if apathy is the glove in our lives into which Satan slips his hand, then that tells me if we let apathy slip into our lives, we can just be manipulated by Satan. If we don't have any form, if we don't have any structure, if we don't have any strength, then we'll just go where that manipulation takes us. And we allow ourselves to be manipulated by the wiles of the devil, where could we end up? It's a very scary thing. And so what do we do? What do we do? What's the opposite of apathy? And my thought is around the word stand. Instead of being manipulated, we have to have the ability and the strength to stand. So let's talk a little bit tonight about standing. What does it take to stand? Well, first of all, if I'm going to stand, I have to understand some things. First, I have to know what I believe. What am I going to stand on? If I'm going to stand, what do I believe? Ephesians 6:14 through 17, I know you guys will know this verse when I read it. It says, "Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about you with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel." If we're going to stand as Christians, we have to know what we stand for. We have to know God's Word. We have to know what God says. Now, we don't necessarily have to be Bible scholars. Most of us won't be. But the fundamental truths, we have to have that. We have to have that foundation, and a foundation that we can plant our feet on. A footing that when the wind blows, we won't just be blown any direction with it. Now, I'll tell you personally, for me, I've gone through phases in my life where I was very hungry for God's Word and I was devouring it. And I'll just be honest with you, I gotta be honest, or I just gotta be real up here. I've been through phases where I wasn't as hungry. And it was more of a chore to study and read. But I do know that the Bible says that we have to work out our salvation. We have to study to show ourselves approved. And there has to be some time in our life where we have established ourselves in what we believe. And it has to be established such that if Brother Jamie says it's different, you might have to respect Brother Jamie. And you might have to question it because you respect him. But you're going to have to really, tell me something I don't know, to tell me that what I believe is not right because I've studied it out. And it's not because somebody told me, it's because I studied it out and because it's true in my spirit and it's true for me. And if I'm listening to a radio preacher and they say something is this and I think it's that, then I've worked out that and it's probably true. People are going to tell you anything. And we've got to know where we stand. Now, one way to know about what we believe is to do exactly what you guys have done tonight. Show up. Show up to church. We learn the Bible in church. We learn the Bible from folks standing here and folks down in the Sunday school rooms teaching us what God's given them to teach us. So showing up is a big part of learning what we should believe. Now, it's pretty likely that if you're here 3 days a week, like most of you are, that every single sermon, you're not going to just be blown away by some deep Bible truth that changes your life. Every single time, you're probably not. Everybody agree with that? It's just the way it is. We probably couldn't handle it. We probably couldn't handle it if it came that way. But I'll tell you this, that if you show up enough times and you listen intently enough, there's going to be that one sermon, there's going to be that one verse, there's going to be that one song, there's going to be something that happens on one of those mornings, one of those evenings, that implants so deep in our soul that it changes the way we make our decisions, the way we live our lives forever from that moment on. So if we have to come 300 times to get that nugget that we can build our foundation on, that God speaks directly to us and wouldn't have spoken to us had we not been here, then it's worth it. I bet if we went around this room tonight, this congregation, and I said, what's the first thing that comes to your mind about something that's come off out of behind this pulpit from whoever that changed the way you saw the world and changed the way you operate your lives? I bet most of you could go to that one thing or three things. It's probably not 20 things. It's probably a handful of things. But we have to be here to get those things. So show up. Don't let yourself miss what God has for you because of apathy. Because as soon as apathy starts to set in, one of the first things that we'll give up is attendance. That's one of the first things we'll let go. Well, you know, I've been every night every service this month. I've been every service this year. What's one service going to matter? I'm tired. Y'all have been tired? Is Wednesday night the most tired you can get through the week? It's right there. It's Wednesday night, right? And, you know, for whatever reason, you overcame that, and you're here. And God honors that. He honors that obedience. So show up. And the other is to study. We got to know what we believe. We got to know what's in God's words. I don't think anybody that stands up here, that Brother Ken allows to stand up here, would intentionally mislead anybody in here. I truly believe that. I might mislead you, but it certainly won't be intentionally. And it might be because I got something wrong that I need to work out. But I'm not sitting up here trying to trick anybody. And I don't believe anybody else in this congregation or stands up here is. But I guarantee you, I am not good enough to create your foundation for you. And Brother Ken is probably not a better preacher and pastor in the country or in the world, but he can't do that for you. It has to be established through our own studying. It has to be established through God speaking to us through His Word. And if you'll believe me, at face value, you'll probably believe the radio preacher at face value, and you'll probably believe the pamphlet at face value, and you'll probably believe just whatever's given to you at face value. And then you don't know what you believe, because I guarantee you gather enough of those voices together, they're going to say different things, and they're going to confuse. So, there's plenty of folks out there that have plenty of charisma, and if we don't have our own foundation, then it's really easy to be manipulated by someone that has that charisma. And with TV, with satellite TV, with satellite radio, with the internet, with videos on the internet, name the source, with podcasts, you can find charismatic presentation of almost any idea from multiple sources these days. Gotta know what we believe based on God's Word. What are we going to stand on? What is it that fulfills God's purpose? What is it that God says about His purpose? What is it we're going to stand on? What is it that God would have us put our energy in? Where should we fight? Where should we pass? When should we engage in battle? When should we pass? Think about Elijah. There was a point where God told him, I think Brother Adam, he's not in here, he's teaching, but he had a great lesson where he talked about Elijah dealing with Jezebel, there's a time to hide and a time to fight. I thought that was a great thought he had. Sometimes God has us be quiet and go squirrel away somewhere and show our humility and show our quietness and wait on Him and listen to Him and trust Him. And sometimes He has us armor up and go stand in front of danger and stand in the gap on behalf of everyone else. We got to know when to be able to do that. We got to hear from God on that. What's worth fighting for? If we don't know the truth, we can't answer those questions. 2 Timothy 2:15 says to study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Another way we gain strength to stand is to pray. God speaks to us through His preacher. He also speaks to us through His Word, but He speaks to us through prayer also. I guess it was last week, Brother Ken, you taught us about prayer and the Lord's Prayer, and there is an order to that prayer. And, you know, there are key ingredients there. It's not really technical. And I guess it shouldn't be technical, because at the end of the day, when we're talking to God, we can't get too structured, because we're kind of like babies talking to a mighty God. We can't really impress Him with our ability to speak or our technicality or our order. He sees us as children, and for us to try to get too fancy with praying would be might be a little silly. God just wants us to talk to Him. God just wants us. He already knows what's on our mind anyway. We never get to His level by our intelligence or our technique anyway. It's just not that complicated with God. The beauty is that He comes to our level and meets us in our personal conversations. And He does it because He loves us and He wants to have conversations with us. He wants to have a relationship with us. Otherwise, we wouldn't stand a chance. We have no access. He sent Jesus here to create that access to us, to create that bridge between us and Him, and that was His choice to do that. And it's also His choice to engage us through that sacrifice that was made. I don't really know why God has the desire to connect with us. My brain doesn't process that, but He does. He just does, and that's the way it is. And if we'll do that, God will talk to us. And you know, God talks to us sometimes in a way that's very quiet and very subtle. But it's when it's Him, you know it. And sometimes that little whisper is enough to take you another decade through life. Sometimes God can speak a truth in your life that's very powerful and means a lot. So we also, if we're going to stand and not be apathetic, we have to have conviction. You ever think about that word, conviction? I'm not even sure it's the right word that I'm thinking of here, but conviction is the word that comes to mind. What I'm really talking about is you got to have grit. You got to have grit, really willingness to dig in. If I'm going to get in a fight with somebody, I'll pick the biggest person and the meanest person I can find over somebody that's got just downright grit any day. You know what? You don't want to fight against grit. Because grit keeps coming. And coming. And coming. And that's what we need to be for Christ. If we're going to be able to stand, we got to have that kind of grit. That we're not going anywhere. We've got to have passion. We have passion. Not apathy. Passion. We have to have a little bit of anger. I mean, Jesus got angry. He went into the temple and he saw money changing hands and he saw people getting cheated. Do you know people were getting cheated in those exchanges? They were only able to give a certain thing for their sacrifice, and they had to buy that sacrifice, but they couldn't use the money they brought. They had to exchange the money, so there was an exchange rate. They got ripped off on the exchange rate, and then they had to buy the thing, and it was repulsive to Jesus. And he got mad, and he flipped over some tables. Jesus was ready to stand for something. That actually started the series of events that led to his crucifixion. We got to have some aggressiveness. We have some strength, even some stubbornness. Anybody in here got any stubbornness to spare? I'm not looking at you, Brother Lee. Got to have some stubbornness. Sometimes we have to have a willingness to risk it all for a principle. So, y'all remember Rocky Balboa in the 80s? Now, I'm a product of the 80s and 90s, okay? I'm just going to go ahead and admit it. I know way too much about the Rocky series than I should. I was 9, 10, 11, 12 years old during that time, and I was an impressionable young man, okay? And Rocky Balboa introduced... Those series introduced the idea of the eye of the tiger. So when they introduced that concept, Creed, this was Rocky III, okay? Rocky III, I watched it the other day. I've got them all recorded. This is after the old man died. Rocky was feeling down, and Mr. T just whooped him. Y'all remember Mr. T? Okay, Mr. T just whooped him, Clubber Lane. This is all coming back to you, isn't it? So Creed told Rocky, you've lost it. You've lost the eye of the tiger. You got to get back the eye of the tiger if you're going to beat Clubber Lang. So we're going to get out of your fancy mansion. We're going to get rid of these cars and we're going to go back into the sweatshop where you used to be hungry and where you used to fight. Sometimes I think as Christians and even as people, we used to fight for things that we're no longer passionate about. Some of us have lost that, and we've let apathy slip into our lives. And when we do that, it's a sad thing. And we're all guilty of it to some extent. When we do that, it's a sad thing because we start to be manipulated. We start going with the flow, and that's the path of least resistance. And in this world, the path of least resistance takes us from where we should be to where we don't want to be. So, who in here, men, I know no women are guilty of this, but probably between the ages of 40 and 55, maybe 35, I don't know. I don't know how this worked. But when you saw the first Rocky, and you saw Rocky crack the egg into the glass, you know, like 3 or 4 eggs, and he got up that morning and he drank them, you know, raw. How many of you tried it? You don't have to admit it in public. But I can tell you from experience, and my mama don't know anything about this, so y'all better not tell her. I snuck into the kitchen and I tried me an egg. And if your kids ever watch it and they want to do it, just let them. Because if you can get it down, you'll only do it once. I guarantee you. But shame on us when we lose the willingness to fight. When we lose the vision to fight. And one problem, Brother Ken, is a lot of us are in a lot better situation than we've been in the past. And we lose our hunger. We lose our, we start to get comfortable. And sometimes being comfortable is not the best place for us. Because we have to be willing not only to fight for ourselves, not only to fight for the ministry, but also to fight for other people's situation. That they can have a better deal. They can have a better situation. So God help us when we let apathy slip into our lives. If we don't have conviction, we can't protect our homes. Because there are always things trying to slip into our homes. And they're trying to take our children. They're trying to take our marriages. They're trying to take our stability. They're trying to take our peace. And if we get apathetic and we start giving in to those things, we can end up in a place that is a long way from where we ever thought we would be. You ever seen a house start to get saved? Kid gets saved. Other kid gets saved. Mom gets saved. Maybe husband has a decision to make. Fights it. Maybe fights it. Maybe starts pushing away. Gets down a path that. Now I'll tell you one thing. If you choose to not fight for what you know is right, if you choose to not take the hard road and fight for your family and fight for the ministry and fight for the path God would have you on, I can 100% guarantee you there is a group of people out there that's ready to embrace you into their mess. They're I can name the places they're sitting waiting on you, okay? They're in the motorcycle club. Whatever. I don't care if you drive a motorcycle. That's not my business. But there are groups out there that'll accept you into that family. They're sitting at the bar. Oh, wait, they're at the lake. They're camping. They'll pull you in. You can pull up. Come on, sit by the fire. Come on in, brother. Come on, brother. Get what you want out of the cooler. You're with us. There's an embrace from this world that is there for you if you decide to go that direction. But there's a guarantee based on God's principles and God's laws and God's truth that there is no prosperity in that situation. There's no protection, there's no peace, there's no prosperity. It may feel like it for a minute. And guess what? Some of that group is going to do just fine living in that. But you see, a lot of them have never seen the light. They're living in darkness. And God will let them live in darkness. Because they're them. But we've seen the truth. We've seen the light. God won't let us sit in that situation. It'll be a very matter of time. Might be a short time. Might be a long time. Might be a medium time. It's God's time. But there will be a situation where God gets our attention in that. And it won't be good. And God forbid it not come to you and come to one of your kids or somebody you left. I don't know if you guys believe that or not. But I believe that God chastens those that He loves. And I believe God gives light and truth. And when we ignore that truth, we're taking great risk on our lives. Not just for us, but for those who count on us. So, conviction. Willingness to fight. David said when he faced Goliath, what was his statement? Is there not a cause? Well, I say there is a cause. There has to be a cause. And we have to believe it enough to step out and fight. Well, so, Randy, what is all these fight words you're talking about? Are you trying to stir up trouble? So, isn't Christianity about, meekness, humility, love, and peace, and grace? Why are you talking about all this aggressiveness? Well, it is. It's all those things. It's all those things and more. It's love and grace and mercy that I could never describe. It's every bit of that. It's beautiful. The heart of God has mercy beyond any of our imaginations. He has love and forgiveness beyond description. Humility to the point where He submitted Himself to die for us. But right now I'm talking about apathy. And I'm talking about standing against apathy. And I'm talking about protecting our homes and our lives from apathy. We go out there and we let apathy, we get the winds of manipulation of apathy pull us out of our situation. If nothing matters, we'll go in the direction we're manipulated to go in. If nothing matters, we'll take the job that takes us off God's path. Because we'll use man's logic. If nothing else matters, if nothing matters, we'll compromise our principles. If nothing matters, when the environment changes, we'll change with it. You know, we don't have any stability, we don't have any conviction, and we're apathetic. When the environment changes, we'll change with it. I'm certainly, please don't take this as bragging, but I had one time in my career, I had a very influential vice president coaching me, telling me that I needed to address people a certain way. Well, I need to dress people down, and I need to do it in public. And I need to straighten them out, and if I wasn't happy with them, and that would introduce fear into the situation. And that's the way you be a good leader. So I told him, I said, and this is a gentleman that used to be a general in the Air Force, and he was pretty intimidating. But Brother Lee, I had learned something 15 years prior. I'm going to tell y'all a story that I don't tell much, but I was in a tough situation where I was coming in every morning to my job, and it was basically just, it was yelling. It was stressful. I was trying to change the world, but it was just a lot of confrontation. I was stressed out, trying to prove myself, you know, young in my job, and it was just a ball of nerves the whole situation. Matter of fact, it was such a tense environment that I wouldn't drink coffee before I went into the environment because I needed to be as calm as possible. That's kind of the situation I was in. So one night I was home that evening and brushing one of my children's teeth because, in case y'all don't know it, 2-year-olds, they don't brush their own teeth. And one of my children required just a gentle headlock. And some of this right here, just gentle, right? Sweet little girls. But after I finished the whole toothbrushing thing, and I was tired and I was stressed out, I took the toothbrush, and this was in our other house, and I slammed it into the sink, and it took a ride in that sink, shot straight up in the air, bounced off the mirror, bounced off the wall, and landed on the floor. And then I looked up and saw myself in the mirror. It was nothing, no aggressiveness against my child, but that was me expressing where I was at that time. And when I saw myself in the mirror, I said, never again. Never again will I let a job, an environment change me to where I turn into something that ugly. So 15 years later, when this VP is telling me what I needed to be, I said, sir, I am blessed and grateful to have my job. I really am. But if that's what you need for this role, you've got the wrong person. I said, we need to figure out who you need to get in here, and we need to figure out what we're going to do with me. And needless to say, there's nobody that has the authority to harm you when God says, no, this is the way it's going to be. I don't say that to sound big or sound brave, but I had to learn a principle that I could stand on to be able to handle that situation later in life. And it could have gone real bad, but God was on it, and God protected it. And when we're doing what God would have us do, we've got a voice in the background We've got favor that can be planted in people's hearts and they can change their mind. So that worked out. But if nothing matters, we won't take those risks. We'll just do whatever we have to. We'll just go with that flow. And we'll end up turning into something we're not very proud of. If nothing matters, we won't take a stand. If nothing matters, we won't protect our family, we won't protect our church, our nation from the manipulation into doing the will of our subtle enemy. We put on that apathy, and the devil slips his hand into that glove of apathy. We may keep the form that we're expecting to keep for a minute, but eventually that hand's going to put us in a place that we never intended to be. So the way we fight it is we fight apathy. We think about apathy in our lives, and we fight it at the very beginning. Because once the hand is in the glove, the control is there. And it usually takes us a little while to realize that we're under control, and we're ended up in a place we shouldn't be. May God protect us and show us when we're becoming apathetic. Thank you for your attention.